Kosky, but to anybody who runs a home-based daycare, they have ended up in a government employees union. They thought they were running their own business, and one day they got a piece of mail that said, hey, congratulations, you're a union member, and we're going to start taking 1.15% out of every subsidy check that comes in. And these subsidies are part of the welfare-to-work program that the federal government runs and is helped to be administered with some state money. And it's meant to provide low-income parents who are doing another job, who are going to school to improve themselves with money. And some of this money is now being siphoned off and put into union coffers. We think that amount of money is about $3.7 million annually.
Which basically means, if I'm reading this right, and I think I am, that federal tax money now, or federal slash state tax money, is funding union activities directly now.
Well, there is a pass-through point, but yes.
Yeah, it's just definitely on the frustrating side to be seeing. I know they pass. You hit on the pass-through point. Let's explain it, because I don't want to mislead here.
So. Yeah, sure. What the union would say is, hey, we had a vote of the 40,000 to 70,000 people that were affected. About 6,000 of them voted, and most of them who did vote voted for unionization. The question that where this is really has there's some concern is about how this thing was formed in the first place. Because what happened was the state DHS went into what's known as an interlocal agreement with, get this, a community college, and they formed this Michigan Home-Based Child Care Council. And this thing is supposed to act as the daycare provider's employers. Well, that's ridiculous. This Michigan Home-Based Child Care Council doesn't pay unemployment insurance. It doesn't pay workers' comp. It doesn't provide any benefits. It doesn't give them a W-2 form. These people get 1099s from the state when they get this money. And so in every way, shape, or form, aside of collective bargaining, it is crystal clear that these people are independent contractors. And the only reason why it's not crystal clear with collective bargaining is you've got the union and the Michigan Home-Based Child Care Council running around claiming that they can put these people under a collective bargaining agreement. And so they did that, but this isn't a collective bargaining agreement in the way that your parents are used to it. No, this is a newfangled one, because they don't negotiate over any money that this Michigan Home-Based Child Care Council has. Its budget last year was $800,000. Its budget this year, and I'm going to come back to this point, was zero, and this program is a couple hundred million dollars. So it is sitting here trying to negotiate, and I'm using that term loosely, over money it doesn't have. So what it really is, it's a lobbying arm. And then the union and this so-called employer take this agreement to the legislature and say, you've got to fund this. We came to an agreement. Give us all this money.
So using that same logic, I could go before the strong-arm some representative, if he'd be willing to listen to me, and ask to appear before a committee and say that, you know, Patrick Wright and I came to an agreement. We need you to fund our grant research that we're doing for how corn borers invade lawyer offices.
You and I could come to a lawyer and radio host agreement and then go to your corporate bosses and say, hey, we came to an agreement. Give us the money.
Can you imagine how quick you and I would get ran out of the place?
Yeah, I don't think we would last long.
No, but yet people who are doing the exact same thing are being treated seriously.
Yes, and they are receiving right now $3.7 million annually. Now, I mentioned something else, which is just an amusing twist and turn to this case. I mentioned this Michigan Home-Based Child Care Council. It got zeroed out. Well, once our lawsuit became well known, some legislators during the 2009-2010 budget process went in and told the administration, we're not funding this thing. They took all the money out of the program. Well, what the administration did was just basically say, okay, fine, and they accepted that, except that they didn't, because they just took money from a different line and are continuing to pay to keep this place open. And so now you've got they're saying, well, we had an agreement with we had signed this interlocal agreement, so we had to keep this thing funded, so we just took money from another line. And at first, they refused to tell the legislature, the Appropriations Committee, the people who give them money, they refused to tell them how they were paying to keep this place open. And they finally relented last week and explained that they were just taking money from another program.
That's frightening, isn't it? I mean, that's just and refused to tell it. Am I reading this wrong, or does this actually look like Michigan has a black ops budget? I mean, the federal government has a black ops budget. They fund things like stealth fighters and so forth. I mean, it's having every appearance of that in Michigan.
You know, I don't know if it's a, you know, CIA $3,000 hammer and toilet kind of budget where you're just going, oh, those are awful expensive. I wonder where the money's really going. As much as it is, what this case has highlighted as we've looked into this is the real need for line-by-line budgeting. Because what happens is Michigan's got a $48 billion budget.
Yeah.
And I think DHS, it runs in the vicinity of $2 billion, but I'm not sure about that number. But let's just ballpark it there. I know that this program is somewhere in either the $250 to $300 million in change range annually. So what they do when they're doing their budgeting process is they roll out all these numbers. They look at it and go, okay, here's all the various programs this particular line item pays for. You know, what can we do here? What can we take out? And then when they're done negotiating, they roll it back into a budget bill so it fits on a page. So the DHS line item for child care services is actually two line items. It was one line item in 2008-2009. It's two line items in 2009-2010. In 1 year, it was $380 million. And the next year, it was $248 million. The point is that there's a lot of stuff rolled into that line. And so it's hard to say, okay, we took out, you know, we scratched out this, we scratched out that, unless they specifically say we've killed program X, never funded again. Everybody in the room knew that they were getting rid of the Michigan Home-Based Child Care Council, but nobody said the Michigan Home-Based Child Care Council shall not be financed through any other kind of line item. And so what it really shows is that we need a better way of tracking the money that the state is spending every single year.
So what we need is what several other states have is to be able to just go online and look at the entire budget and chop it apart as we see fit as far as looking at it.
Exactly. I mean, in Missouri, you can track each and every penny and check that the government of any government issues. In Michigan, you can sometimes do that. We have a program, as you know, to do that at a lot of the school districts to try and get as much transparency to get checkbooks online, but it is not yet a statewide thing. This budget shows some of this problem. So is it a black ops budget? There's an argument there that there was some deception going on by the administration, that they knew that they were supposed to shut this place down and they didn't tell anybody that they weren't. But I'm not sure that they're entirely out of bounds given the way that budgeting goes in this state. But the fact that they were willing to stonewall the Appropriations Committee for a number of weeks, again, there's just been a kind of ick factor to this thing that's been going on since we discovered it, and this is just another one of those factors.
Let me check the weather real quick here. Patrick, stand by if you would, please. Weather on the O's at WMKT. It's partly sunny conditions today with a daytime high near 34. Tonight, partly cloudy, down around 16. Tomorrow, sunshine. 36 for the time it's over and done. Current weather conditions around the north. Curtis at 14. Toppenby is at 10 above. East Jordan also at 10 above. Traverse City, 21. But check out Kingsley. It's a few miles away in the southern part of the Grand Traverse County, 1 below. So as you get away from the water, it changes really quick today. Current weather conditions. What we're seeing, nothing on radar right now. Things are looking real good. And Patrick Wright is here. He is with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, their legal foundation, chatting with him about some of the issues going on with taking people who are running small daycare facilities in their homes and making them union workers almost without their knowledge. I guess technically enough to say they are, but we're getting into that a little bit and explaining that. Patrick, I talked with Kevin Elsenheimer on the radio on Monday, who spoke about this very organization within DHS and is just thoroughly upset and is bully pulpy in this thing to no end and says he's going to continue to do that until they get answers. I mean, because it should, if it's not illegal, it should be illegal to get up before people who are your boss and you work for them, and they tell you, we're not going to tell you how we're spending our your money that you appropriated to us, refuse to answer it based on the grounds of their attorney. That is outrageous.
Yeah, it's just absolutely startling when it's done. So, you know, this case has exposed a number of problems. We just talked about the transparency, and there's some legislative and executive power questions between the two of them, because there is no excuse for the executive to run around and take money from the people and then refuse to tell the Appropriations Committee how they're spending it. I mean, it's just the fact that anybody even thought to do that and then did it a couple of times. It's just it's utterly shocking.
And had to tell them based on the advice from our attorney. I mean, it sounds like since when is our attorney representing them as individuals? I mean, I realize they're going to say, well, we're representing the organization. I mean, what are they afraid of? One part of the government's going to have to sue the other part, which I guess may be the case. We're done.
Yeah, I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know what they were thinking when they did this in the first place. I have my uncharitable views, but you know, I do think that when this eventually wraps up, and I don't know when that will be, that we're going to have a. I think there's going to be some need to have a number of oversight hearings and discuss a lot of issues that have arisen here, because there's some real shady stuff going on.
You get the impression that this may be the straw that broke the camel's back as far as the bureaucracy running amok in Lansing. I mean, you've got to wonder if this is just went too far on both sides of the aisle.
I will say this. We're a nonpartisan outfit, and I have been very pleased with the work of some of the members of the House, which is controlled by the Democrats, particularly Chairman Dudley Spade, who has been willing to go on camera, despite the fact that typically organized labor is a heavy contributor to the Democratic Party and asks some hard questions. And so I do think that there is some bipartisan disgust at this whole arrangement.
I mentioned that this has a big Petoskey connection at the beginning of our interview. Let's explain that, because I don't want to lose touch with that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the two people who we started the lawsuit with, Sherry Lohr and Don Ives, are both from Petoskey. Don, due to some of the economic things, has decided to temporarily close her place, and she's now working for Sherry. But they've been our lead plaintiffs, and we're happy that they've had a steel spine and have been willing to take on the system.
So they're the ones basically there, and then you've got one more person downstate that's involved that started the class action in this, correct?
No, let me explain that. There's two other people on our suit, and then this has attracted so much attention, some of the national outfits are coming in too. There's another lawsuit now that's been filed. Ours, as you can tell, is based on state law on whether or not the interlocal agreement is proper.
Yeah.
This goes on. This started going on in late 2005 and 2006. And what it is a way of organized labor, which is losing money and people hand over fist, to boost their membership and boost their union dues.
So darn grateful to have you around the broadcast today. It isn't funny. You can check weather on the O's again in about 4 minutes. Talk to Patrick Wright right now with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Chatting with him on WOKT. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
Appreciate you being with us today so much and giving us the updates. So now we've set the basics of how this thing is broke down. Where does and we've also set where it currently is as far as the not knowing how the funding of this organization is. And man, is this? Do you think this is the one? And I'm asking you to speculate on this one, but you've got a lot of feeling for what goes on in Lansing. I mean, do you think that this could be the issue that makes the movement toward getting all the finances in Michigan put online? Maybe if not a reality, certainly closer to that.
I would certainly hope so, but, it's become somewhat of a political football. There was one party that was proposing and the other party couldn't allow them to get credit for it. It's just a good government thing that 80 to 90% of the population agrees with, so sooner or later it's going to happen. And I certainly do hope this triggers it, because these are the kinds of things. I mean, this happens. This isn't the only situation where this happens, where there's money that nobody knows is being spent. I mean, who would ever heard of this Michigan Home-Based Child Care Council? No one. And, you know, how did this happen and why and so forth? So it is something that I'm hoping is going to lead to more transparency, but I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon.
It's going to be interesting to watch. There's no doubt about that. Come on in and join us at 866-371-1270 today. I've heard one of the things that they've complained about, because I've brought this up before, not in this context, but brought it before about putting finances online. And I hear things come out of Lansing like, it's going to cost an incredible lot of money. We don't have enough money to create all the servers. We don't. I mean, for Pete's sake, if they can put the entire Bible on one CD and have a lot more room left over, you can't tell me that people can't buy a few extra servers to make this happen. This is not rocket science.
I hear about that, too, and I think it's absolutely insane. I mean, there isn't a person who has a computer these days that doesn't have scanning capability. Put it on, scan it, put it online as a PDF, takes about 5 minutes, and go get yourself a cup of coffee. And you haven't wasted any time in your day. It's a ridiculous argument.
But I guess the thing is, instead of them saying that, well, you know, instead of coming back and saying, okay, we'll put about three people in charge of this and separate them from they'll be part of this department that already exists and just sit them at a desk and that'll be their job, which that might be realistic. And have people make phone calls when some agencies not, hey, guys, you haven't put your form up yet. That's about
right.
It.
Right.
But they're going to come up, I'm fearful that if it does get to this, they're going to come up with some scenario. They and whoever they is, we will find out when it happens. But the appropriate they will show up and say, well, we need a whole division, and we're going to need about 50 employees, and we're going to need about $40 million in assets from the state to be able to put it up properly. I mean, I'm just waiting for that to be the next step. If this ever takes wings, that you got to fight that battle. Instead of learning how to operate like a business facility would when they want to do an expansion.
Yeah, we're already getting that. I mean, we've talked to a number of these state agencies and so forth, and they've claimed they've got some sort of antiquated computer system that would entirely need to be redone. And, well, wait a minute. I can sit in a coffee shop and I could do an entire thing. That, you know, I'm sitting here putting all of my old bank records onto a disk myself so that I can just clean up room in my file cabinet. Are you kidding me? You can't do that?
Technology
is that simple.
We could go down to Walmart and buy the machines, everything but the servers, and go to Newegg.com or Tiger Direct or something and buy a couple of servers and be up and running with this.
Yeah, it is an argument you will hear, and what that should tell you is something that we all already know, and that is because government has a monopoly, it is largely inefficient. It doesn't do things the way the rest of the world does because it doesn't have somebody else out there beating on it, taking its market share away when it does things that are stupid.
Yeah, everybody talks about they get really upset when they hear of other firms from out of state getting contracts from government when other government over a government agency. And I've heard that said before, but you know, sometimes maybe competition is good in that regard. Maybe if somebody who did private work for the Indiana government came up and proposed to change how Michigan operates things for half the cost as far as record keeping, I think it might make us a fortune.
Yeah, there's definitely something to that, and it is, you know, there's government should do what it has to do, and we want it to do it as well as it can. But when you give something monopoly power and you don't put any forces out there to compete against it, it is inevitably going to become inefficient. I don't care how good the people are, the motivation is, you know, there's a way to keep score. When you're in a marketplace, there is a second-by-second way to keep score, and that it just doesn't exist when you have monopoly power.
That much is very true. Hold that thought, Patrick. I've got to check weather on the O's right now on WMKT. Looks like we've got partly sunny conditions with a daytime high of 34. Tonight, overnight low is 16. Tomorrow, sunny near 36 by the time it's over and done. Current weather conditions around the north, Menominee 22, Curtis at 14, and Traverse City it's 21, Petoskey 10 above. Talking to Patrick Wright right now. He's with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy's Legal Foundation, chatting about what's going on with our state government right now, in particular, with this issue about daycare workers that are being placed into a union and already have been, for the most part, without their consent. I mean, it's just an interesting story, and also what we can do about it in government, how we create accountability issues. Patrick, I mean, when you sit down and talk about that the government is a monopoly and is going to run inefficiently, I mean, that totally makes sense, but is there anything we can do about that part of it?
Sure. Well, this is getting a little bit far afield from my expertise, but I will say this, that we can privatize a lot of things that the government does. There are things that government probably has to do and some things that people are going to want government to have a role on, even if there is a private sector out there working on it with. And we just need to maximize those. You know, part of the thing that you'll end up with is, you know, where we're talking a lot about public employee benefits and salaries in these tight budgetary times, one of the things that competition does in the private sector, and one of the reasons why you're seeing the union membership go down and stabilizing, is because you do have these competitive forces. It keeps the system operating as smoothly as possible, because if you know you're paying, you know, let's say a private prison versus a state prison. If you're paying the guards two-thirds the salary as opposed to what you're paying them to do the exact same job at the state, pretty soon it's going to be clear which way you should go. And so those forces help us drive and keep costs as low as possible. And if you say, well, you know, we got to have some of these things run by the state, we always got to make sure that there's somebody, government, who's accountable to the people and control, that's fine. But to the extent that you can put as much competition into the system, you're going to get it to run as efficiently as possible. And the market will do a lot of this oversight for us.
Totally makes sense to me. I mean, you've got two people knocking at your door, you can see which one's a better deal pretty quick if you've got an eyeball to look at the tail.
Right.
So where does this go from here? I mean, as far as, because I know that, tell us about the lawsuit that the Legal Foundation of the Mackinac Center filed. I mean, I'm aware of it, but let's make sure everybody's caught up with that part.
Yeah, we filed a lawsuit at the Michigan Court of Appeals, and we've said, look what DHS did in entering into a contract with a community college and thereby agreeing to take these rights away from other people who weren't part of this contract. That's illegal. We have not had as much success as we wanted at the Court of Appeals. We're looking right now at going up to the Michigan Supreme Court. I think that's likely, but we'll be announcing our decision here in the next couple of days or next couple of weeks. And so we'll continue going on from there. And right now we also have the federal class action ongoing at the same time. So the Department of Human Services and the Granholm Administration, she's getting it from all over the place.
The frustrating thing on this is that no matter what happens, there's no real accountability to individuals who might knowingly do something, and it's tough to prove knowingly, and I don't know if you can this time, but if somebody knowingly does something that they know is going to be illegal under Constitution or under statutory law, And there's nothing that holds anybody, for the most part, in these kind of matters, privately accountable, is there?
Well, that's not entirely true. I'll explain the system to you, and you'll be somewhat, I think, probably a little bit surprised at it.
Okay.
I used to work, when I was in the Attorney General's office, at the Michigan Attorney General's office, I used to work and defend corrections lawsuits.
Okay.
And those are filed oftentimes against individuals. So what would happen is a prisoner would say, you know, Guard X did something nasty to me, and the suit would be against Guard X personally.
Yeah.
Now we would defend them as part of their job for working. Most of the time we defend them unless we were absolutely certain they were guilty, and then the promise is that if a jury finds them guilty, there is a indemnification. I don't remember if it's a statute or if it's a clause in the contract. Most of the time, the state will indemnify them, in other words, pay any judgment. So let's say Guard X gets found guilty for, $25,000 for doing something mean to a prisoner.
Okay.
The state generally says, if we are willing to defend you, then we think that this claim is bogus or inappropriate, and we'll be willing to pay if you get hit. And so that's probably what would happen here, because with the federal lawsuit, there's a claim that these people have violated constitutional rights of these daycare providers. And what will happen is even if that's found to be true and that there was any kind of liability imposed on the individuals, and I don't think that they were going after any kind of a monetary award against the individuals. I think they were just going against to get the money from the union back. Then the state would agree to indemnify. Now, there's a couple of arguments. Well, why should we do that? The answer probably is not too many people would work for the state if they felt like that they had to provide their own attorneys and could get sued all of the time. So there is some thoughts on both sides on how that's supposed to occur.
Oh, that's a tough one, though, because there's just some times where you can that you can obviously prove that somebody did something that should have been considered at least against the spirit of the law, if not directly against the law. Period. You think they should get hammered?
Yeah,
you know in your heart they should. It's like somebody just busting you upside the head and you can't prove it. You know you want to get back at me, but I can't prove it. And if I could take retaliation, I'm going to go to court and get in trouble myself for something they did. That's frustration.
That determination is oftentimes made when the lawsuit is filed, and so somebody will make a decision usually in the attorney general's office of, okay, is this something that falls in the scope of what we should normally defend? Or, you know, there was a couple of times, let's say, that there were prison guards, male prisoners, watching over female prisoners who were lifers, and somehow they were pregnant. That's a kind of an indication that there was probably something wrong there. In those cases, a couple of those people didn't get defended. So there are situations where you just go, sorry, you're on your own. But those are very rare.
Interesting stuff. I'll talk to you about it in just a second. I've got to check weather on the O's right now on WMKT. Partly sunny conditions at a daytime high near 34. Tonight, overnight low is 16. Tomorrow, sunny near 36. Current weather around the area right now in Mackinac City, it's 27. Elk Rapids also at 27. And in Rudyard, it's 18 right now. I guess it's kind of rare, Patrick, because it's tough to prove somebody's intent of the heart, isn't it? I mean, unless you've got the smoking gun, like an email or some kind of track record that can be tangibly held in somebody's hand, it's almost impossible, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be difficult. I mean, I have my theories as to what's going on in this case, and we haven't talked about them and gone on too much about it because we're just letting the facts speak for themselves. And, you know, if people want to put two and two together and say, okay, there's a large political contributor here and there's an awful lot of shady stuff going on, they're more than welcome to do it. But, you know, you can't really see into people's hearts, so no.
Just a frustrating situation from there. You mentioned that you're looking at taking this before the Supreme Court. If you do so and that fails, where does it stop right there because of the state issue, or where can it go from there, at least potentially?
Well, yeah, there still be an opportunity potentially with these people and potentially with others to bring the state court action in a different place. And part of the, you know, we didn't get a very helpful explanation from the Court of Appeals as to what was going on. I have a very hard time believing they thought that what was being done here isn't illegal. They might have thought that it was the wrong cause of action, but what they didn't do was say anything. We got a six-word dismissal from the Court of Appeals, and we filed something with them and said, this is 40,000 to 70,000 people, $3.7 million, kind of deserves more than six words, don't you think? And at which point they gave us a 10-word dismissal on the motion for reconsideration. So,
what did the 10 words say that the 6 words didn't?
I said the motion for reconsideration is denied, or something along, or the under rule of the court, the motion for reconsideration is denied. Whatever it is, something there that adds up to 10 words. So, you know, it's been somewhat frustrating because in a parallel situation, somewhat with the Reform Michigan government now, where a lot of people were going to potentially be losing portions of their salary that were state workers, including the judges, they got a very thorough and answer on an exact same type of claim that we brought here. It's a mandamus claim. So, I don't know what the Court of Appeals is thinking. I wish I did, but if the Michigan Supreme Court doesn't think that this is the right cause of action, hopefully they'll tell us that, and then we'll file it a new cause of action in a state court with new people and keep on fighting.
Some powerful stuff right there, and it's this is something that almost has to be fought, because if this thing, and I appreciate so much, Patrick, what you guys are doing with this, because if this case had not come up, I mean, it's just, if nobody stood up with this case, rather, who knows where this could end up going? I mean, it doesn't take a large stretch of the imagination to see this affecting all sorts of businesses and operations. I mean, my goodness, anybody who receives any kind of state aid of any form to help out other individuals is potentially at risk here, aren't they?
Well, how about this? Any of your advertisers have any kind of tax subsidy, you could be now a government employee spokesman. Now, there is anybody, the theory on which this goes, which is that anybody who indirectly receives government aid to help provide a service is now a government, you know, if doctors can now be hit up on this because their patients, some of their patients have Medicaid, landlords who people get rent control, grocers who accept clients with food stamps. What government aid program out there, it's almost limitless.
Well, heck, you could do that even as an individual if you really wanted to stretch it. Anybody who gets the state earned income tax credit, I mean, even.
Sure. Why not? I mean, now you all have to contribute money to this union lobbying group that will go out there and try and get you more money. Well, and if this union lobbying group just so happens to give more money to one political party, well, isn't that swell?
Well, that's another thing, too. I mean, let's look at if there is any positive to this. Normally, the expectation is a union is out there lobbying for your interest. As far as you know, is this union lobbying for the interests of child care workers?
I'm sure that they would say that they are, but, you know, this is the point, is people shouldn't be forced to associate with it. Every union does collective bargaining, and every union does its politics. And for a lot of people, those two things don't match. Okay, that's the real problem with union, is they have a political view that goes with their collective bargaining view. And when they're given the power of the state to force people to pay upon fear of losing their jobs, then that is when this gets difficult. You know, you can have a union out there, and people can join in politic all they want and give voluntary money. But it is when the state gives them the power to negotiate on somebody else's behalf, bind them, and threaten their job if they don't agree to pay and help facilitate the union's collective bargaining, that this gets really dicey. So it is the principle that's really here at issue, and that is some people just don't like the politics of these places, and they don't want to do anything with them. They're running businesses out of their own home in the manner in which they wish to run them, and they don't want anything to do with it. And you know what? I do want to bring up one more point that just came up in a Washington Times article that was published on this just yesterday or 2 days ago. And that was, if all of these home-based businesses are now government employee shops,
mm-hmm.
Does that mean that the ACLU can come in, look around, and go take down that cross, remove all the religious icons you have in your house because we want to have to have separation of church and state?
Well, sure it does. It absolutely means that. If they wanted to push it that far, they have legal standing based on precedent to at least bring it up.
So any of these places, perhaps somebody chose a daycare because they believed in the religious beliefs of the person who was running it, and now you're going to have somebody come in, and maybe all these DHS inspectors are going to come in and demand that everybody remove any kind of religious picture or any, you know, if somebody runs a Jewish place, they have a Star of David over their door. If you have a cross up, any of that stuff might have to come down because gosh knows that these people are now government employees, and we can't have the state doing anything at all with religion.
Oh, absolutely insane, no doubt about it. Patrick Wright, how do we learn more about the Legal Foundation with the Mackinac Center?
Oh, you go to www.mackinac.org and click on the Mackinac Center Legal Foundation. There's a big button over there on the right-hand side, and you can get all the prior work we've done and check up on all of the new developments in our case. As a matter of fact, here in the next, if it's not up already, we're going to have a new video, kind of a fun look at all of these entities out there that are not our clients' employers, that, you know, we were trying to go out there and find one that's willing to stand up and say, hey, we really are the employer. And none of them have been willing to do it, and that's being done by Kathy Hoekstra from our investigative reporter, and it should be out any moment now.
Keep us updated on this. I appreciate you doing so today. Let's stay on this. I'd appreciate it muchly.
Okay. Thanks, Greg.
Take care. Patrick Wright on 1270 AM, 92.1 FM, WMKT.